Welcome back to the Andrew Luck Book Club podcast with a very, very, very special guest and the guest host for this month. She is a WNBA MVP, not one, not two, not three, but a four-time Olympic gold medalist. Is that right?
Yes.
Our super hometown hero of Indianapolis, Tamika Catchings. Thank you. Thank you so much. One, for hosting. Two, for great books. And three, for agreeing to do this podcast.
No, thanks for having me. Super excited.
Yeah. So first question, what is harder, writing a book or playing in a WNBA finals?
It depends what kind of field you're going in. But, you know, definitely looking at writing the book. Everybody asks, like, how long did it take? It took us a good 3 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it took a good 3 years. And imagine, like, doing that and then playing overseas and coming back and doing the WNBA and, you know, all the other stuff that you have going on. So it was kind of like a prolonged process. But, you know, I'm glad that we took the time to do it and do it right, because I love the book. And just I love, you know, the guy that I wrote it with, Ken Peterson. Mm-hmm. Awesome guy of faith, and just kind of like we have a lot of the same values. And so he wasn't a basketball fan until he wrote the book, and he's like, oh my gosh, I can't, my wife and I, we just can't stop watching you and watching the WNBA. So it's cool to have, you know, kind of convert people into WNBA fans too.
Absolutely. That's awesome. So Catch a Star, Shining Through Adversity, Become a Champion by Tamika Catchings and Ken Peterson. It was an awesome read. I really enjoyed it. I learned a lot about you, and you know, you're very, it's a good thing. It's very, very impressive things. And, it's always funny to learn things about you're a very public figure, in Indianapolis, and have been long before I got here. Mm-hmm. And will continue to be. So it's always funny to sort of, I think it's always interesting for the curtain to be peeled back a little bit on people's personal lives. And I hope everybody who's read the book or will read the book got as much enjoyment of reading it as I did. But what did you learn anything about yourself when you were sort of going back and writing and thinking about things during that process?
Yeah, I think the coolest part of it is, as you go through stuff, it's one thing. And, mm-hmm. you know, like, I'm kind of that person, like, okay, I have a goal. I want to get to that goal. Once I get it, check. Okay, now I have another goal, check. Now I have another goal, check. And, you know, so that's kind of the person that I am. But then you look at, like, my mom, you know, sharing her side of the story, and my dad sharing his side, and, you know, my sister and my brother and everybody else, you know, coaches and all of that throughout the journey. Coach Dungy, of course, having the opportunity for him to write the foreword. But I think through it all, you know, the relationship that you build, and the thing that I learned about myself the most is, you know, just kind of going through the journey and being able to share with so many people and come out. And I've always been goal-oriented since mm-hmm. I was a little kid. And so even now to where I'm at today and the thing that I've accomplished, you know, it's cool to look back at your journey. And sometimes because you're living it, you don't realize just, I mean, you know you're fortunate and you know you're blessed, but you just don't realize how much. And not that I needed a book to do that, but mm-hmm. I think having to go through and proofread it over and over and over and over and over again, you know, you're just like, man, it's really cool. And one day, hopefully, Lord willing, I'll have kids and be able to share that with them too.
Yeah, that's awesome. Sounds like you appreciate all the steps along the way, not just the end result.
Of course.
Now. Yeah, that's neat. So when you're going back and proofreading and talking to your family, obviously a bunch of about it, whose version of the stories were correct? Was it yours 100% of the time, or do your brother or sister have different versions of them?
I would say my sister is probably the most detailed of all, and then my mom, like, she just remembers some off the wall stuff, and I'm like, she's like, you don't remember when we went camping and you had, you know, we ran out of regular milk and you had chocolate milk for your cereal and all this. I'm like, nope, don't remember that.
That's
like,
funny.
All the crazy stuff. Come on, mom.
That is really funny. And you write a lot about your family and your dad Harvey and your mom Wanda and Taja, who I've met before, and I don't think I met Kenyon, and it was. Interesting reading about his experience with basketball. And you moved around a lot growing up. I don't think I did not realize that. And you talked about how that was difficult on you at times, right?
Yeah, definitely moving around. And you know, think about even the transition, going to different schools, and when you go to different school, you know, going to different states. Just kind of like even for us, the progression being the professionals, right? Mm-hmm. We go like coming to Indiana. And for me, my experience coming to Indiana, I knew nothing about Indianapolis. And I was like, what is this place?
Yep.
But, you know, anytime you move, it's that I don't want to say culture shock because I don't mean it like that, but it's just a shock of having to be in different places. And so the comfort zone for my brother, my sister, and I was that we always had each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have been my best friends. And even now to this day, you know, like we are all super close. My brother actually lives in St. Louis. My little nephew just committed to Harvard.
Wow.
Earlier this month.
In basketball?
Yep. So he'll be going and playing basketball, and got another nephew at Presbyterian College in Carolina. So it's cool to just, you know, be able to share everything, my adventures with my family, and like you said, moving around and being able to have the strong relationship that we had then and still have now.
Yeah, that's awesome. I know we moved around a lot as kids growing up, and family was always the made things easier. But playing sports was the number mm-hmm. two thing for me. And you write a lot about that, in that it was always easy for you to be yourself on the basketball court, no matter if it was new people, guys, girls, that you felt comfortable there, right?
Yeah, and acceptance.
Yeah.
You know, you always look like you're always searching for a way to be accepted.
Yep.
And so I think, you know, definitely, I mean, I moved to Duncanville, Texas after my sophomore year, so in between sophomore and junior year of high school, and I just remember right off the bat going to open gym, playing basketball with the guys and, you know, the teams that were there, men's and women's teams, and that was kind of like my first step of meeting friends, because now the way from my sister, away from my brother, away from my comfort zone, so sports was an avenue for me to be like, okay, you know what? I know what I'm good at, and I know where I feel comfortable, and that was on the basketball court. So that, and then volleyball, and running track and field. So, you know, a lot of different things.
Yeah, so it was Chicago to Italy to Abilene, back to Chicago, then to Duncanville, right?
Well, actually, Milwaukee.
Oh, Milwaukee.
So I was born in New Jersey.
Ooh.
I was born in Stratford, New Jersey. My dad played with the New Jersey Nets.
Yeah.
Then he got traded to Milwaukee, so we picked up our little family and moved to Milwaukee. And then before he actually got traded to or went to the Clippers, but we stayed in Milwaukee. So when he finished, that was 84 he finished. And then 85 we moved over to Italy for a year, then we moved back to the States. We moved to Abilene, Texas when I was in second grade. And then we moved up to Chicago when I was in third grade. We moved around different areas in Chicago from third grade to my sophomore year, and then junior, senior year in Duncanville, and then Tennessee, and then here.
That's awesome. And in Duncanville, you're talking about going into open gym the first day. Shaq Fu, right?
Oh, my God. Don't remind me. Come on, Andrew. We were friends.
Is that still your nickname?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
I won't bring it up ever again, I promise.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I mean, I know I wrote about it in the book, but I swear, the first day of school, like, that was open gym. So the first day of school, I'll never forget, his name is Sam. And, like, down the hall, like, I walk in the doors of the school, like, my first day, and all of a sudden, I hear, Shaq Fu! Oh, my gosh. I was like, yeah, no, don't call me that. Not in public, not ever. That's so embarrassing. I was like, first of all, I'm a female. I don't want to be Shaq
Fu. That's funny. Well, looking back on it, we've talked about looking back, you know, earlier, a couple minutes ago. But looking back, moving, how did that shape you? Did that turn into a positive later in your life?
Yeah, I guess so. Because I think about moving early on, and then my first actual experience with USA basketball was my junior year of high school. And so even with that, you know, we're going overseas, going touring different countries and playing basketball. So I think that being able to adapt to different places and different people, now that I'm thinking of it, I learned that. You
yeah.
know, I learned about being in Italy and not speaking Italian. And even though we went to international school, that was just at school. But everywhere else, it was you having to interact with Italians and, you know, speak their language and figure out how you fit in there. And then, of course, like all the different places that you go. And so I think it also helps in sports. You know, as much as we move around and go to different places, like the traveling aspect, you kind of get used to it. You kind of get used to moving and not necessarily always having a backpack, but to an extent you do.
Absolutely. Well, let's transition. Pat Summitt. I loved reading about her. I remember my junior year at Stanford, we went to the Stanford, Tennessee women's basketball game, and it was her last year coaching, and the whole crowd gave her a standing ovation on the court, off the court, every time. It was one of the most incredible atmospheres I've ever been in. And I love reading about her teaching you how to play defense.
Oh, yeah.
And you say that was really the only time you guys butted heads, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it only took me one time to learn. You know, I'm a fast learner.
That's a good thing.
And I hate, you know, I think because of, you know, just the disabilities that I've grown up with.
Yeah.
I feel like since I was young, you know, the acceptance piece of it, but always kind of going over and beyond to make sure that I did what I had to do and to kind of stay on people's good side, you know, the acceptance feeling again. But yeah. That first day of practice and her teaching me how to play defense. And, you know, I mean, you think about these knuckleheads nowadays, and I was definitely one of those that came in. I mean, I was very humble, but because I had never really been yelled at, and in my high school, AAU ball, nothing, not to that extent, you know, like, hey, you're doing this wrong, hey, you're doing that wrong, but never to the extent that Pat did. And I think the thing for me, too, was, most people probably told me I was, like, doing something wrong, like, one-on-one. But she said it in front of all of my teammates.
Yeah.
And then the gym was packed because we always had open practice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was just kind of like, yeah, that slow fizzle to the volcano that comes, yeah, that was me.
Well, I loved reading about that. And you can tell just by the way you write about her that you hold her in the highest respect. And I'm sure she taught you so much more than just basketball, and you talk about academics and doing right in the community and how treating people. She really was an incredible presence, right?
Yeah, and not just about what we do professionally, not just about what we do in the classroom, not just about what we do in the community, but, you know, I think overall when you think about legacy, and, you know, now you talk about Pat and the legacy that she's left, she always talked to us about, look, you know, I want you guys to be great people, great citizens, you know, just great overall, whether you play basketball after you leave college or don't, or whether you get straight A's or don't. You know, I just always want you guys to have a positive influence on our society. And, you know, so everybody talked about what is her legacy. Well, her legacy is all the players that played underneath her and what we continue to do and what good things we continue to do even beyond, like, everything that I do is a part of her legacy and keeping, you know, her name where it needs to be and just all the great things that she represented. But because of because of me being influenced by her to an extent, it allows me, and, you know, she opened my eyes to, like, the type of person that I wanted to be pretty young.
Yeah, that's awesome. That really is awesome. And I love her sort of idiom, her axiom about to be the best, you've got to play the best and beat the best. I think that's so cool. I know I referenced the Tennessee-Stanford game when I was in there, but it seemed like Stanford and Tennessee played every year, and UConn and Tennessee, and I didn't realize it went back all the way to her and must have been Gina Auriemma sort of deciding that this was good for their programs and probably also good for college basketball.
Great for women's college basketball.
Yeah.
And a great setup to a story. But, yeah, I mean, between the Tennessee-UConn and the Tennessee-Stanford games, I mean, those were, like, highlighted games on everybody's calendar. Like, you must go, you must be there, you know. And it's cool that we've been able to keep that alive from the Stanford aspect. And I know there's been a lot of people that are trying to get the Tennessee-UConn game back going. But, you know, I just remember specifically against those teams, like, the week leading up to those games were, like, intense.
Sweet.
Just preparation, you know, and then, yeah, but it was awesome.
That is cool. Well, Pat Summitt's my second favorite women's basketball coach. Tara Vanderveer is my first favorite.
Of course. Yeah. Of course.
Great Stanford coach. I was secretly very scared of her as well when I was on campus. She's great.
Well, yeah, I have to tell you, you know, a lot of the players that have played underneath her, and of course, you know, we have Jeanette Poland-Mavunga on our team now, but a lot of the players that have played for her, and I mean, I've been around her quite a bit too, and you have the utmost respect for what she's been able to do at that program at Stanford, and you know the success that she's had over the years as well.
Yeah, she was fun. She actually helped recruit a bunch of the football players when Stanford didn't have a head football coach for a while.
Oh, wow.
She was she pulled double duty. I do have a serious question for you. You've been your last year in college, you had a serious injury. You know, professionally, you've had some serious injuries. Any advice for someone else going through, let's say, a shoulder rehab in the middle
no
of
name.
Their season?
No name.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think sometimes we get so caught up in, you know, I'm like, I got to hurry up and I got to get back on the court. I got to get back on the field. I got to, you know, get back out there because the expectation that are put on you from everybody else, you know, become heavy. And, you know, I would have to say for myself, I mean, I did my ACL my senior year in college. And then, of course, I got here. So that I did that. I had surgery in February, got drafted in April, came here. And then in July, I had gotten cleared to run forward. And so Kelly Koskoff, you know, our GM at the time, now she's moved up the rank, but she wanted me to go on the road trip with the team. We were going to play the Houston Comets. And I was like, my first road trip as a professional, I know I'm not playing, but, you know, just to be around the team and be around the environment. And so I went, and I'm running, like, they're practicing, and I'm just running on the sideline. And then all of a sudden, I felt something go on my knee. And so, like, I didn't want to make a big deal out of it. I was trying to find a trainer. I finally made it to the training room. Ended up flying back, so literally flew there, went to practice, got hurt, flew back that night, and then I had torn my meniscus. And so I went in surgery the next day. And so, you know, like, not that I was rushing to get back, but I wanted to get back. Like, I really wanted to play. And so after that, I was like, okay, you know, slow down. I'm a little hard-headed, so I'm like, you know, slow down and really take your time. So I think, you know, just anybody that's going through an injury and trying to come back, you know, just you got to be patient. And, you know, like, we're living in a fast-paced world, and everybody's, like I said, there's so many expectations on us to get back, and you're almost like Superman, Superwoman. Like, you know, you don't get hurt. You're invincible, but you do, and your body needs the time to heal. And I think the hardest part of it all is really the mental aspect of, you know, especially for me after that second injury, will I ever be the same? Will I ever get back? And will I, you know, like, what will I be? And, you know, the rest of the story is history as far as just the success that we had through the organization and, you know, being able to win gold medals. But I think the biggest thing, if I hadn't have taken a step back then and really let my body heal, it allowed me to, you know, look at the rest of my future. And, you know, I did have more injuries, but yet every single one, like from the mental aspect, I was able to figure it out. Like, okay, you know, mentally I know I'm going to go through this low, but my faith is strong. The people that you keep around you, you know, it's really important that circle is small, but they're not a bunch of people that just tell you all the things you think you want to hear. You know, you need some honest people around you and people to keep you accountable.
Absolutely. Sage advice. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. And you talked about the rest of your professional career. 2012 was my rookie year in Indianapolis, and it was also the year of the Fever WNBA championship. I remember how excited everybody in the city was, and how it felt like the whole city was behind y'all. That must have been a really fun experience, right?
It was awesome. Yeah, it was awesome. 2009, we went all the way to Game 5. First time, you know, our kind of like our Achilles heel was always the Detroit Shock, and so we finally got past the Detroit Shock. 2009, went all the way to Game 5 against the Mercury, and we lost. And so it was just like a devastating blow. I mean, we were super excited we made it that far, but then, you know, you're like, oh, man, we lost. And so 2010, I'm like, okay, we made it all the way there. So 2010, like, now we're going to make it all, you know, guaranteed we're going to make it all the way there and we're going to win. Well, it didn't happen in 2010. It didn't happen in 2011. And 2012, like, it's just a weird year the way it played out. You know, we didn't start off very well. We kind of had an up-and-down season during the regular season, but, You know, I always say, like, there's three seasons within a season. The first half, then we have All-Star, then you have the second half, and then you have playoffs. And so, you know, I just feel like playoffs, we all banded together. And, you know, we had Katie Douglas got hurt. And so
I remember
were
that.
Like, oh, yeah, you guys will never, you'll never get, you know, you'll never win. You'll never get past Minnesota Lynx. You know, there's no way. Well, then remember JP gets hurt.
Yep. Remember that as well.
So then it's really like, okay, both of your best shooters are down. There's no way that you guys are going to beat Minnesota. But it was really cool how, you know, everybody stepped up to the plate. We all banded together. I mean, all year we had fought for each other. But in those moments, like going into that final series, it's the coolest, one of the coolest things that I've ever been a part of, you know, from a leader standpoint, just being able to get people to play maybe better than they expected themselves to play, but being able to pull literally every single thing that you can possibly think of out of somebody to compete at such a high level.
That's awesome. That's cool to hear.
Your time is coming.
That's what we're working for. That's what we're working for. So the book was published in 2016, I want to say, right? And you've since retired from basketball. You went to another Olympics, another gold medal, right? what is winning a WNBA championship very similar to winning a gold medal? Is it different? Are they cool in their own way, or is one more important to you than the other, or is that unfair to say it like that?
Very unfair to say.
Yeah.
Because they are so different. You know, I'll say the difference between obviously representing your country and representing, you know, Indiana Fever, is two totally different things, because, you know, it's such a bigger, you know, big picture when you look at just the Olympics and being over there. But, you know, I would say, like, winning here, because we never had, like a team full of stars. Like, even look at Minnesota Lynx, like, all the players, all the Olympians they have on their team, and all the All-Stars and first and second team All-Stars. Well, we never really had that here. You know, like, I was there. Katie was an All-Star. You know, Bree ended up being an All-Star later on, you know, and even looking at some of the All-Stars that we've had through our organization. But we never had that. And on that team in particular, 2012, it was Katie and I that were our All-Stars, team All-Stars. And so to be able to win with just really, like, hard hat people, you know, people that go to work every single day and just work their butts off, like, to win on that compared to winning an Olympic gold medal where you have the best of the best playing on one team, it's different. But I don't want to discount either one of them, you know, any of them. I don't want to discount, but because they're so different. But yeah, it's just a different feel.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think that's one thing as a football player. I always watch the Olympics and say, man, I wish you could represent the United States playing American football.
Yeah.
Be a bit of an offer.
How cool would that be?
That would be awesome. It'd be fun to try and make the team first. Ugh, jeez. You also, your tea store, I loved reading about that in the paper. My girlfriend's been and loves it. Talk about that, and maybe talk about something else since the book is finished. Where life has taken you?
Wow, where has life taken me? Well, when I retired last year, I really was like, okay, I don't want to even think about a job until 2017. And that was like my main, I'm not going to think about a job till 2017. Well, right off the bat, I've been doing and continue to do, like, speaking engagements and traveling. So, you know, did that, been doing that. And then late November, I got a phone call about commentating. And it's funny because I always said I wouldn't do two things. I would never coach and I would never commentate. And the only reason that I said that I would never do it is because I was like, I just feel like for all professional athletes, they just go to what their comfort zone is. And so, you know, you've always been in football, you've always been in basketball, you've always been in whatever sport you've been in, it's a natural transition to go to coaching or a natural transition to broadcast, to be a commentator. And so I was like, oh, I'm never going to do it. Well, I ended up doing it. And then right before the holidays, too, I learned about my favorite tea shop, Tease Me Cafe. The owner was moving to Savannah, Georgia. And so I was like, oh, well, what are you going to do with the shop? He was like, well, we're going to have to shut it down. I'm like, well, why would you do that? He was like, we haven't really found anybody that we feel comfortable kind of leaving it too. And so, you know, a couple of weeks went by, I talked to my husband, and long story short, I ended up buying the tea shop and buying everything from the previous owner. Took over in February, and I love it. I do. I love being an entrepreneur, but I, even more than that, I just love the customers that we have and just what we've been able to, what he was able to create from the Tease Me aspect and what we've been able to kind of carry on.
Oh, that's really cool to hear. And I know as a professional athlete in this city, and really for an athlete of any age, any sport, Tomika, your story's awesome. I think what you, more importantly, what you do in the community and reinvesting in things like Tease Me and all you do with the Catch the Stars Foundation, what you do with the children's hospitals and literacy and everything, it's really, really impressive. I think you're an incredible role model, again, for any athlete in any walk of life. I appreciate you sharing your story with Catch a Star. I appreciate you being the guest host this month for the book club, and I really enjoyed chatting with you today. Thank you.
No, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Best wishes. Take care.